Welcome to Worlds Apart. Should I stay or should I go? Vladimir Putin is not known to be an avid fan of the British punk rock, but this question posed in the 1980s hit by the band appropriately called The Clash accurately sums up the dilemma that the Kremlin faces right now with regards to the upcoming BRICS summit in South Africa. Should the Russian president indeed stay in Moscow, or should he go all the way to Johannesburg despite Western pressure? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Thembisa Fakude, a senior research fellow at Africa-Asia Dialogues. Mr. Fakude, it's great to see you. Great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Now, before discussing BRICS summit and all the geopolitical and legal intrigues surrounding it, I want to ask you about this latest attempt by a group of African leaders to mediate the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, and I would add the West on the background. What do you make of it? Because I'm sure the Africans are pretty used to the Europeans coming up with all sorts of peace initiatives, but having the tables turned is very unusual. In fact, it's, I think, pretty unique case.
Yeah, I think it was a unique case, and it's a first of its kind, as you said, that Africa is now exporting their negotiating skills into other countries. But of course, Africa has got interest here. Not only do they want to see peace, as President Cyril Ramaphosa emphasized, but also Africa is suffering from, notwithstanding the size of the business that is done in terms of grain, fertilizers, etc. But Africa is also impacted, and the food security is going to be impacted if this war continues. So that's one of the reasons why they are there. But again, Africans are much more closer to Russia than many other countries. So this is, again, a group of individuals who are trying to assist their friend.
You mentioned the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, and he was pretty straightforward in saying that the African leaders see their intervention as in part a duty before their own people, because, as you said, everything surrounding this conflict, sanctions, the barriers to global trade, affect Africa more than any other continent. Do you think the pleas of those leaders, African leaders, will be heard or hopefully heeded?
Well, we hope they're going to be heard, but already there are conditions from both sides. Russia has said that it's not going to pull out of the territories that it has conquered from the 24th of February 2022. At the same time, we've heard Volodymyr Zelensky during the press conference that he had with the African leaders in Ukraine, Kyiv, saying that they are not going to be entering any negotiations with Russia until they are pulling out. So you have those very strong positions from both countries. So one wonders how the negotiation efforts are going to go ahead. Cyril Ramaphosa has presented the 10-point steps towards peace. But until, of course, you've got these two conditions that both leaders are not willing to compromise on, are basically hurdle.
Mr. Fakude, you mentioned two sides, Ukraine and Russia, but there is also a big elephant in the room here, and this is the so-called collective West. Now, what's interesting to me is that Mr. Ramaphosa, he's not new to peacemaking. He played a certain role in mediating other conflicts, including the Northern Ireland, peace process. But he comes to the Ukrainian issue at a time when the West is strictly against any mediating at this point of time. They still believe that, negotiating anything with Russia at this point of time would be yielding to Russia. So I wonder if advocating peace is actually a risky business in this day and age.
Well, I don't think so. I think the peace mission is endorsed. I don't think Cyril Ramaphosa will just pick up his bags and travel to Poland, Ukraine, and Russia without speaking to certain powers.
So you think he asked for permission from somebody? Who do you think he would ask for permission then?
Well, I think he got permission from all sides. I think he had an extensive relationship as well with Vladimir Putin. There must have been some discussion in that regard. We don't even know whether perhaps Russia wants to initiate negotiations, but they cannot start the negotiations, so they ask for a third party to do so. But at the same time, I doubt if Cyril Ramaphosa and the leaders that are involved in this mission would have gone without communicating with their counterparts in the West.
Now, as you mentioned before, the African leaders brought with them a 10-point plan, which contains some general principles, for example, a negotiated rather than militarily facilitated solution, but also some concrete proposals, for example, uninhibited grain and fertilizer exports or prisoner exchange, the return of children back to their homes. Do you think any of them are likely to be realized?
Well, I have my own theory. I think the most important point is the exchange of prisoners and return of the children, because that has got a bearing on the ICC indictment on President Putin. And I'm of the view, if that can be achieved, we might just see a softer approach from the ICC and the West in terms of President Putin coming to South Africa in August for BRICS summit. So we could just see that one being the first step towards this peace initiative, but it also has got some spin-offs in terms of allowing President Putin coming to South Africa.
This issue of children is a very interesting one, and it's also, you know, open to all sorts of manipulations, because as President Putin told the African leaders, many of those children who were removed from the formerly Ukrainian territories were orphans, and they were removed alongside their legal guardians. They were in orphanages. So he said that if any of the relatives are willing to come, you know, and prove, you know, their relationship to the children, Russia would eagerly, you know, facilitate their joining together. But don't you think that sort of putting the focus on the ICC, we actually, you know, getting into all this manipulative game, because, you know, these allegation of forcefully removing children is like, in Russia, at least, is perceived as an absolutely bogus thing. They couldn't come up with anything else, so they came up with this laughable claim.
Yeah, but there are two sides, and there's one side which is amplified around the world, unfortunately. And unfortunately, the Russian side of the story, we don't get to hear, at least from the English-speaking world. All we know is that we have accusations at the moment that are standing, that the Russians, particularly President Vladimir Putin, abducted those thousands of children, taking them from their parents into Russia. So until the other side is articulated, unfortunately, you're going to have this one side amplified, and you're going to have this one side believed by the rest of the world, unfortunately.
Well, the rest of the world could do some fact-checking, and I mean, at least as far as I'm concerned, I think we actually have to look at the fate of those children specifically, rather than using them as a political ploy in this game between Russia and the West and now South Africa as well. What do you think? I mean, who do you think which priority is the highest here? The fate of the children, their safety and security, or the compliance with the ICC?
Well, it's both. I think if the ICC did not make this indictment, you'll have South Africa not even entertaining this discussion. But the fact that you've got a warrant of arrest issued by ICC, with whom we have ratified the Rome Statutes and we are a member of, we have to take it serious. And South Africa has got no choice in this regard, not unless, of course, they decide somehow to get out of the ICC. But this is a warrant of arrest of one of the clubs that you belong to. And because you are a member, you are bound by rules, regulations, and you have to enforce whatever it is that they insist on you to enforce. So this is the situation. I agree with you that ordinarily it should have been downplayed. It should have been a discussion, a by-the-way discussion. People have concentrated on a much more bigger issues, particularly ending the war. But because there is a warrant of arrest in that particular regard, unfortunately, South Africa will have to abide by that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I assume South Africa has to make very difficult choices, not only with regards to legalities of the ICC court order, but also you know, maneuver among various parties, particularly deciding how to go about Western pressure. And earlier this month, U.S. lawmakers sent a letter to the U.S. Department of State, essentially proposing to limit South African access to American market due to what they call the country's deepening military relationship with Russia. And we are talking about nearly $1 billion worth of exports in just 3 months of this year. So it's a lot of money. And the South Africa is getting those opportunities under the document called the African Growth and Opportunity Act. How serious of a threat that is, do you think?
Well, it's a very serious threat because, as you know, business and economics play a huge role in American politics. And South Africa, for one reason or the other, has found itself in this position where it has offended certain Americans and who feel that they are much more closer to Russia. And as a result, they are presenting all of these threats. So it's a very important one for South Africa to navigate. But I think the initiative that we see last week of the African heads of state seeks to communicate clearly where South Africa sits in this regard. South Africa has insisted that it's non-aligned when it comes to this war, of course, notwithstanding what many believe in this country. And I think that the actions of last week will communicate a different kind of message to the West in terms of where South Africa finds itself in this regard. Cyril Ramaphosa comfortably sits within many of these formations in the West, including, as I've said earlier on, the G20. And it's got a very amicable relationship with the West, including Joe Biden. So we'll have to wait and see what will happen when the negotiations to renew AGOA start in earnest. But there are threats and there are fears in South Africa that South Africa might just be expelled from AGOA.
I want to ask you a personal question because I gather from your commentary, from your writing, that progressivist, liberal, human rights values are close to your heart. And you often are quite critical of President Ramaphosa for what you call his flip-flopping on various geopolitical issues. What do you make of this approach, you know, promising Africa opportunity at one occasion and quickly revoking it once any particular country decides to exercise its sovereignty or its neutrality, because neutrality apparently is not to the taste of the West either?
Well, it's completely unacceptable. And this is why I support those who are calling for a multipolar world, a world that has got, allows states to be swing states or swing countries. South Africa has got a right to decide on its interests, what our national interests are. And of course, the historical relationship, I do totally understand where the government and some people in South Africa sit in this regard because of the relationship that South Africa had with the USSR and Russia in particular. But at the same time, you have a lot of other people who believe that it's in our interest to invest largely on the US-South Africa relationship. And they feel that if we do lose US as a trading partner, it might also impact on our national interest and it might impact on our economy. Already we're sitting on very high unemployment rates. So Africans in general are sitting on a much more complicated position. That's why most of them are pushing for this multipolar world where they can have a choice to decide based on their national interests who to make relationships with and two, who to work closely with in terms of economy and finance.
Well, Mr. Fakude, now we have to exercise our own sovereign right to take a very short break, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Thembisa Fakude, a senior research fellow at Africa-Asia Dialogues. Mr. Fakude, before the break, you mentioned some of the Africans who feel that they have to invest in their relationship with the United States and with the West. If they only put all their eggs in that basket, aren't they in a threat of losing all other opportunities? Because BRICS is ultimately not an anti-Western club. What we see, or at least the way it's described here in Russia, it's essentially an organization that is now representing non-Western global majority. So there is no uniformity of decisions there. But do I understand you correctly that some in Africa feel that they have to choose either between the West or the rest?
Well, I think for now, Africans are caught between the rock and the hard place. And this, for me, by the way, it's a great political opportunity where Africans, for once, are going to be saying, what is our national interest? And many Africans have been very vocal in that regard to say that they're looking at multipolar world. They're looking at multi-relationships with various countries in the world. BRICS is a very important player and important platform in which African countries must establish stronger relationships. We have also bilaterals with countries such as Russia, China, United States, Turkey, etc. Again, those are also extremely important. So the current situation that we find ourselves, I think it's a great political opportunity for Africans for the first time to articulate to the world to say, listen, we have a multi-polar relationships with all the powers of the world. And what will dictate relationships between African countries and those platforms is their national interest. And we've seen that happening at the moment. And I think to an extent, those voices are beginning to trickle into the ears of many in the West in terms of where Africa sits in this regard, including Russia, by the way. Russia also need to understand and know that Africa has got the right to choose its friends.
Absolutely.
It can't be dictated. And I think that messaging will trickle through from the US, China, and Russia. And that's why I do believe that the current standoff that we find ourselves at the moment is an opportune time to articulate those positions.
Now, let's put that issue aside and talk about the upcoming BRICS summit, because as we already alluded, the issue of Vladimir Putin's participation in it is pretty charged, especially in South Africa itself. Which way do you think it's more likely to lean when it comes to the ICC arrest warrant?
Well, there's no other way. South Africa is deeply entrenched. It has signed the ICC, it's part and parcel. It was incorporated into our constitution. The only way you could have the possible arrest rescinded or not applied will be through the vote in parliament, and that has to be again taken to the constitutional court. So as things stand right now, if President Vladimir Putin was to visit South Africa, South Africa will be forced to arrest him. That's the situation at the moment. Of course, there are varying views in South Africa in that regard, that you cannot even dare arrest a head of state of the size and power of Russia, you know, the nuclear powerhouse of the world. It will create international chaos, and it will be chaos in international relations. That could be extremely, extremely dangerous. But at the same time, if President Putin does come to South Africa and is not arrested, that also will compromise multilateralism. It will invite huge criticism on South Africa. South Africa might just find itself also in a much more compromised position when it comes to its allies, particularly those in the West. Notwithstanding, by the way, that those that are calling for the arrest have not ratified the ICC Rome Statute.
Absolutely. I think you're talking about the United States in particular, whose leaders launched a number of wars that led to deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. And we all know that many of those wars were launched under false pretexts. But you mentioned, the possible undermining of multilateralism and not upholding the ICC arrest warrant. And it's the same court that back in 2011 endorsed absolutely bogus charges against Muammar Gaddafi. We know that. It's the same court that didn't issue a single warrant against the Western leaders. And I wonder if for a country of Nelson Mandela, who I know was far more principled on when it comes to, you know, defining who your friends and enemies are and being very sovereign in that choice, I wonder if that's in a way a betrayal of his legacy when you have to sort of side with the polite society in a way that they don't punish you.
Well, I totally agree with you. And I think we were in a hurry after 1994 in terms of ratifying all of these treaties and entering into all of these partnerships because we wanted to be accepted by the world, you know, post-apartheid. But, you know, the biggest challenge with ICC is it's double standards. You know, you've got well-known criminals in the form of Tony Blair and George Bush, who are sitting comfortably, not indicted,
well, even
by
Barack
the way,
Obama, with all due respect, I mean, to the color of his skin, I mean, this is a man who ravaged Libya, who destroyed that country, and it was a relatively prosperous country. I'm not talking even about Muammar Gaddafi and his fate, but about he destroyed the whole state. It's an open-air slave market right now. There are people sold on the streets there. But he didn't...
No, I agree. I totally agree. I mean, it's double standards. So far, it's been... leaders from mainly African countries that are taken to the ICC, notwithstanding that you've got people who are butchering others on a daily basis, including Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. But importantly, Tony Blair travels freely, notwithstanding that he's the same man who took us on a false pretense, including George W. Bush, into the war in Iraq, which has since created havoc around the world. So the biggest challenge with the ICC is its double standards.
What is the South African interest in upholding the ICC's credibility?
Well, South Africa threatened to withdraw from the ICC, if you remember, in 2016, after that fiasco we had with the former president of Sudan, Hassan Omar al-Bashir. But the ANC conference last year, December, rescinded that decision to say that, you know, we need to find ourselves back and fully entrenched within the ICC. But again, the criticism stands that ICC is not applying justice equally. It attacks others and it's quite lenient on others. And this is the case in point. And this is the test, by the way. But unfortunately, South Africa, as I've said earlier on, had no choice post-1994. It was looking for acceptance. It had to look for, being accepted in all of these clubs and organizations, including the ICC, because we wanted to be known as a democratic institution. And unfortunately, now chicken have come home to roost.
I think it's primarily Western narrative that South African reputation as a democratic country would be damaged if it doesn't do A, B, and C, all the things that are pushed for by the West, including the ICC arrest warrant. But I wonder if South African leadership's ability to maneuver, to pursue their own interest in these very dire straits. I mean, the international situation is pretty complicated right now, and many countries have to do a lot of juggling. I mean, juggle abstractive values versus practical necessities of their own people. I wonder if, taking a stance out of, you know, your own vision, out of your own agenda, could earn you some credibility in non-Western corners. Do you think the rest of the world is looking at Africa to see how, you know, how to behave in this complicated situation?
Yeah, well, I think South Africa is by the way, the honeymoon is over. For a very long time, South Africa was treated with kid's glove, again, because of being a Mandela country. But now we're facing real politics. And we have to make serious decisions. And I think South Africa realizes now that the national interest must take precedence in whatever it is that we do. And that's what they are trying to do. But again, there is a fumbling and flip-flopping and, you know, toing and froing in terms of the positions that they are supposed to take. But having said that, until they resign and get out of these treaties that they have, which are sometimes, disadvantageous to the African national interests or South African national interests, we are going to be finding ourselves more and more in similar situations. That's the first point. The other point is South Africa carrying on with where Mandela left and his predecessors, they want to promote and push this multilateralism, even though multilateralism doesn't work. And we know, for example, at the moment that they are talking about the expansion of the United Security Council because it still maintains the very few members who decide who lives and dies in the world. South Africa is one of those countries that says We need to expand this. So those are the kind of talks that South Africa is having and agitating towards the change around the world. But, you know, it's a tough time for a young democracy, but they have to grab the bulls by the horns. And I think this particular one of the ICC indictment and a warrant of arrest against a major power in the world is one of the greatest tests ever we've had since the dawn of democracy in this country.
Well, it's always, you know, all of us come to a point when we have to grow up and make some difficult choices. I think that was also the case for Russia in deciding whether how to repel Western military expansion. And the decision was taken, and we all have to live and deal with the consequences of it. And unfortunately, we will have to do that for many, many years, especially Russia when it comes to Ukraine, because we are sharing the border, we are sharing families with them. So it's actually a hard choice. And I think, once again, Russia would appreciate anyone who can actually authentically help us mend fences with our neighbors, and hopefully rebuild that country and make sure that you know, it does what it needs to do for its people. Now,
one of the things, sorry to cut you, one of the things that is important to note is that the South African relationship is between both countries, Ukraine and Russia, because there are many, many Africans and South Africans in particular who are in Kyiv and in places such as Odessa during the days of apartheid. So both Russia and Ukraine played a very important role. And I think that's what adds to the further confusion that we find ourselves in South Africa in terms of who to support in this war, hence the non-aligned position.
When you talk about the Ukrainian Soviet Republic, you know, that was part of the Soviet Union, and the legacy of the Soviet Union for the current Ukrainian leadership, you know, it's abomination, total abomination. They don't recognize any of that as something legitimate, as part of their history. They see that in totally black terms. So when South African leaders during apartheid era went to Odessa, they went to the Soviet Union, and it is Russia that is a legal successor of that country, not only in sort of international law terms, but also in terms of ideology, and recognizing that, you know, that chapter of our history, it was difficult, but it was there, and you cannot just take it out. And perhaps, this is where South Africans are an inspiration for us, because I think sometimes when I speak to South African experts, you have a much more objective look at that period of Soviet history in terms of social safety net, in terms of public services. You know, it wasn't all black at that time. And I think in part, your current government is also inspired by those ideas, but it has been able to readjust it to modern times. But it's hard to argue that governments need to provide social services and be supportive for their citizens in multiple ways, don't you think so?
You know, our understanding and view of the Soviet Union, of course, it's all grandiose. It's great because they provided the wherewithal and the assistance that we needed. But of course, if you speak to other people who lived during that period, whether in Russia proper of today or in Ukraine, as you said, they don't recognize that era. But for us, we're talking about the geopolitical importance. The Africans were physically in Ukraine, notwithstanding the politics of today. And for them, when they do the interpretation and analysis on where to sit on this wall, they think of the people and geography. And that's what I meant.
Okay. Well, Mr. Fakuda, it's been a fascinating conversation, but we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.